This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for January the 22nd, 2021. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending January the 22nd, edited this week by Linda and Keith Vincent. Reading today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. The headlines this week are Safety Campaign Poised for Success, Campaign to Save Downland on the Edge of Winchester, and Queen's Message to Friends of Cathedral. So, may we have the first story, please, Heather?
Safety Campaign Poised for Success. A campaign for a new road crossing in Winchester appears close to success. Campaigners have been calling for a crossing on Andover Road to connect the growing estate of Barton Farm with Week and Hairstock. Parents with children at the recently opened Barton Farm Primary School were involved, fearing that the road posed a danger to children. The campaign attracted cross-party support, including City MP Steve Brine, local Liberal Democrats and parish councillors. Now, Hampshire County Council has said it is drawing up plans for a crossing. Senior County Councillor Rob Humby on Friday briefed Mr Brine, Councillor Jan Warwick and Kings Barton resident Mike Slynn, who last year presented a petition to the County Council. Councillor Humby said in an email to them, HCC has now instituted a technical feasibility study to establish the possibility of implementing a signalised pedestrian crossing on the Andover Road in the vicinity of Hall's Farm Close pedestrian footpath link and the ridge. It is anticipated this will be completed in spring 2021, that being the study. Work to investigate extending the existing 40-mile-an-hour limit on Andover Road has also commenced. We anticipate our proposals will be advertised shortly, which will give the public the chance to comment if necessary. Nicola Wells, head teacher at the Academy, said, "I'm delighted that the County Council are undertaking a feasibility study for a crossing. The crossing is vitally important to the safety of our pupils and parents coming from Week and Hairstock, as well as to other residents in the area." Mr Brine said, "This is great news and shows what sensible cross-party efforts can achieve when we are working together." And added, "This crossing is important for now, of course, but the campaign always had one eye on the future as the new school fills and this area of Winchester gets every busier with pedestrians." Mike Slynn emailed Councillor Humby, "Thank you for the meeting today and for your consideration of the views of local residents. I am very pleased that the County Council is considering a signalised pedestrian crossing of Andover Road near the Halls Farm Close pedestrian footlink path." Mr Slynn asked Councillor Humby to extend the proposal for a 30-mile-an-hour limit to include the crossing location. Councillor Warwick added, "This is very positive news for those parents with young children needing to cross the Andover Road every day. I am grateful to the Highways team at Hampshire County Council for their prompt support for the safety of our residents." Councillor Humby said vegetation had been cleared from the footpath on the Barton Farm side of the road. Consideration will be given to surfacing the currently unpaved path. There was less good news on a crossing on Worthy Road between Stoke Road and Dyson Drive in nearby Abbots Barton. Councillor Humby said there were insufficient pedestrians at the moment, but it would be kept under review. Councillor Humby said vegetation had been cleared from the footpath on the Barton Farm side of the road. Consideration will be given to surfacing the currently unpaved path. There was less good news on a crossing on Worthy Road between Stoke Road and Dyson Drive in nearby Abbots Barton. Councillor Humby said there were insufficient pedestrians at the moment, but it would be kept under review. Carla is constructing a tarmac route linking the new estate to Courtney Road. If this road is well used, In the future, it may increase the numbers crossing Worthy Road, and this position may change, said Councillor Humby. The King's Barton Forum on Tuesday night heard that pressure is being maintained on Hampshire County Council to improve the currently unmade and very muddy footpath to the school.
And campaign to save downland on the edge of Winchester. Its future has been uncertain for nearly 50 years, but campaigners are again working to preserve at least part of the site. Bushfield Camp and the adjacent downland has been disused since the mid-1970s when the Ministry of Defence pulled out. Since then, there have been several attempts to secure the long-term future of the downland area between the camp and Whitechute Ridge. A bid for Millennium funding for a country park was unsuccessful, as was a later attempt to have it declared a village green. Now, Beau Priestley is campaigning for the downland to be saved from any form of development. The camp area off Badger Farm Road is earmarked in the local plan as a potential business park. She has been lobbying the City Council, speaking to interested local parties, including Hampshire Gardens Trust and the owners, the church commissioners, who are planning to put forward fresh proposals this spring. At the moment, the downland is gradually reverting to scrub, the first stage of it returning to woodland. Miss Priestley of Fairfield Road Full Flood said local people were exploring the idea of a community purchase. She said, "I think Bushfield Down must be one of Winchester's best-kept secrets. 25 hectares of ancient rolling unimproved chalk downland with fabulous views over St Cross, St Catherine's Hill and the Water Meadows tucked into the triangle between Badger Farm, Stanmore and St Cross. Once you've found it, you don't forget it. It feels like untouched countryside, but it's only just over a mile from the Buttercross." Bushfield Down is currently scheduled under the City's 2013 local plan to be laid out for public recreational purposes in perpetuity, reflecting its long-standing status as a much-loved green wedge into the city. "Many local people regard Bushfield Down as a very special place for people and wildlife, especially as we consider a future beyond coronavirus. Since June last year, I've been pursuing getting some proper protection and management for this small but locally very significant green space." She has support from renowned landscape architect Kim Wilkie, who lives near Bishop's Waltham. He told the Chronicle, "Winchester is one of the most remarkable cities in Europe for the way that it sits in its landscape. The city was founded in a bowl of chalk tributaries and water meadows ringed by ancient chalk grassland downs. The relationship between the open downs and the Roman settlement still survives. Looking in from the surrounding countryside, the principal buildings are still the cathedral, college chapel and guild hall, silhouetted against the downs. And looking out, you can catch glimpses of open Neolithic downland in all directions. St Catherine's and St Giles Hill are the best known, but Bushfield is just as important in the complete pattern. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust is willing to manage the land in the same way it is grazing British white cattle on nearby Whitechute Ridge next to Badger Farm. Debbie Tan, Trust Chief Executive, in the letter of support said, "The vision for Bushfield Down recognises the existing and potential value of the land for people. We consider that Winchester is still deficient in public green space and must explore well-placed new green infrastructure as a matter of urgency to keep pace with the population." And this is accompanied with lovely pictures of an avenue of beech trees near Bushfield Park Grant Camp and a view of Bushfield Down, which certainly looks very wild and uncultivated. And then there's a picture, a long-distance picture of Bushfield Down, which looks like a countryside hill.
Friends of Winchester Cathedral, 90th anniversary. Queen's message to friends of the cathedral. The Queen has sent a message of good wishes to the friends of Winchester Cathedral as it celebrates its 90th anniversary this year. The organisation was set up in 1931 by the then Dean of Winchester, Gordon Selwyn, to provide financial support to the cathedral. Two of the Friends' earliest projects were the restoration of the St Swithin's Gate into the cathedral close and support for the embroidery of over 100 kneelers and cushions. The work of the Boyderers and their connection with the Friends was the subject of Tracy Chevalier's recent best-selling novel, A Single Thread. The Queen has been the royal patron of the Friends since her accession in 1953 and has taken a keen interest in their work. 3 years ago, Her Majesty gave permission for Queen Elizabeth's Winchester Carol to be commissioned in honour of her own 90th birthday. Ahead of its premiere in the cathedral, she asked to hear a recording, which was sent to Buckingham Palace. In 2012, she met the present Friends chairman, Bruce Parker, at the New Forest show and asked how their appeal was progressing to raise funds for the cathedral's medieval windows. "We are very honoured to have Her Majesty as our patron. I've been made aware that she knows a great deal about our cathedral history, and particularly in these rather dark days, it's absolutely wonderful to have such a cheering message from her," said Bruce, the former BBC presenter. The Dean, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, added, "The gracious message from Her Majesty the Queen gives a sparkling start to the year in which we celebrate the 90 years of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral. The Friends are fortunate to have such a patron, and we are fortunate to have such friends." In the letter from Windsor Castle, Her Majesty wrote, "Please convey my warm thanks to the Friends of Winchester Cathedral for their kind letter sent on the occasion of the 90th anniversary of their funding in 1931. This is very small print, I'm sorry. Yes, it is 1931. "As your patron, I was pleased to learn of the success of the many virtual events which have been encouraged and organised since the outbreak of the pandemic, and of the funding by members for an installation in the cathedral to allow online video screening of services. Your continued support and thoughtfulness in writing as you did was much appreciated. In return, I send my best wishes to you all for a most memorable year celebrating this notable anniversary in the history of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral."
That concludes the headlines for this week. If you have any problems with the recording, or if you know anyone else with sight impairment who might like to receive our free recordings, please contact Liz LeGrice on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. But please make sure that your playback box is properly plugged into the mains before you call. Now we will proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum, editorial comment and the almanac, and then we'll continue with items of general news. Here are the death notices. Aldridge, Michael John Mick, declared his innings closed, aged 69, on 13th of January 2021, following a short stay in hospital. Ashley, Conrad Ashley, on the 27th of December 2020, after a long battle with poor health. Balfour, John Balfour, retired Winchester solicitor on the 27th of December 2020, aged 80 years. Barnes, Les Barnes, formerly of Twyford, died suddenly at Basingstoke Hospital on 27th December 2020, aged 86 years. Burgess, Eileen Rosina Burgess, passed peacefully in her sleep 02/01/2021. Hone, Michael Vernon Hone, passed away at home, surrounded by his family on the 10th of January 2021, aged 84 years. Mallard, Jean Mallard, sadly passed away on the 28th of December 2020. Maguire, James Gary Maguire, died peacefully on the 6th of January 2021, aged 82. Newman, Lionel Ivan Newman, sadly passed on the 14th of January 2021, aged 80. Olding, Arthur John Olding, died peacefully at Orchard Gardens Care Home, Bishopstoke, on the 2nd of January 2021, aged 92 years. And Phillips Sheila Phillips and Richards, John Richards, late of South Wanston, a loving couple for many years who passed away within 2 days of each other in early January 2021. Prida, Leonor M.J. Prida, died peacefully at home on 11th of January 2021, aged 76. And Shannon, Robert Bernard Shannon, died peacefully 30th of December 2020. And here's the Christian comment written this week by Liz Tatham. Last night's Perfect Planet showed a mesmerising demonstration of the collective consciousness and survival of a colony of fire ants, who create their own self-supporting raft when the floods come. Swept out of their home, they gather on the water's surface and pile on, holding together with their queen in the centre, and float downriver until they find the right spot for their new home. They can do this for weeks, apparently, and any of the family falling off is aided and brought back into the floating circle. When they find the right place to land, they clamber off and carry their queen, essential to life, to land, or a large palm tree in this case. It put me in mind of two things. The people of Israel travelling through the desert from exile in Egypt, the angel of God before them to guide them, and the Ark of the Covenant, their source of life, carried among them. These were a tribe, a people, staying together and walking in faith until they found their new home. Fast forward several thousand years, and here we are, walking together, helping each other, caring for the elderly and vulnerable, until we find a safe place where we can resettle. Times are unprecedented, we all know that, and it is strange and disturbing for us. Excuse me. Like the people of Israel, we have times of moaning and complaining as we are fed up with our own long journey through a pandemic. We are suffering loss of loved ones, liberty, income, and what we knew. It's tough, but we do seem to be seeing the way out now. Last weekend, many churches made the decision to cease public worship. They're still open for prayer and private contemplation, but we cannot gather to praise the God in our midst. Who is the God in our pilgrimage? The ants have their queen, the people of Israel have their ark, but who do we have? Well, we still have God, and Christians see him through the person of the risen Jesus Christ, who lives in our midst through our church. We are still here for you, said the Dean of Winchester Cathedral in her letter, announcing the cessation of public worship, for now, and this is true. As I write, the television is on in the background with a demonstration of organ music from Salisbury Cathedral, the organist playing soothing music to the many entering that space for their vaccinations. Like other UK cathedrals, they have opened their doors to play their part in this massive collective community push to race against the virus and vaccinate us all. These cathedrals know this is an opportunity to walk alongside the community with pastoral presence, and in the case of Salisbury, music. So we keep walking, guided by hope and driven by determination and our own collective consciousness. Not long now, say the politicians and scientists. So let us keep helping each other and looking to the God amongst us for comfort and our own source of life. And now we come to the letters. There are 11 letters this week, beginning with one read by Heather.
Michael Campbell, MBE, writes about police culture. Sir, it is incredibly sad to read of the appalling behaviour of a whole unit of policemen at the Basingstoke Centre engaged in investigating serious organised crime, which led to the summary dismissal of five and a final written warning for one. Two of the six, including the unit's leader, a detective inspector, retired before the misconduct hearing concluded its investigations, but were still found guilty and barred from ever serving as policemen again. The constable given the final written warning joined the unit only 3 months before the probes were installed, and he was concerned about the culture he encountered, so much so that he asked for advice from his father, who was a retired, long-serving policeman. The chairman of the misconduct panel took the exceptional opportunity to include in the judgment that the panel's view of the advice from this retired, long-serving policeman was poor, to put it mildly. How deeply worrying that it needed a case like this to expose the culture that has existed in this and a lot of other police forces in the country for many decades. We are about to elect a new Police and Crime Commissioner, and I very much hope every party fielding a candidate will make absolutely sure that the candidate will hold the Chief Constable's feet to the fire to ensure she pursues a vigorous investigation into all such behaviour in her force. It will be interesting to read any reference to malfeasance and corruption by policemen and women in the Police and Crime Plan, which the new PCC will publish soon after their election. Michael Campbell, MBE, Sheldon Parks, Steading, Sheldon, Alton.
And Nick Bell writes about a fantastic job. Sir, I would like to counter the very negative article that was printed last week regarding the arrangements for appointments at the centre currently operating locally at the Holiday Inn. I am part of the volunteer team from Winchester Rotary, stewarding the sessions, and have so far attended on half a dozen occasions to help ensure that the process runs smoothly and all recipients are processed efficiently and as possible from a practical rather than a clinical point of view, while generally reassuring them. I have therefore seen what a magnificent job the clinicians and their support staff from the NHS are doing to deliver this life-saving vaccine at a speed and in quantities which are truly amazing. I think it important to point out that they are not aware from week to week how much vaccine will be available. This depends on both government procurement and the rate of vaccine production. They were between a rock and a hard place at the beginning of this programme, and indeed still are to a certain extent, knowing how these factors beyond their control will pan out, and therefore how they can affect their schedule and causing the issues in the report. Whilst I have every sympathy with the elderly people who had a wasted journey, I think it is important to recognise that we are human, mistakes do happen, and it is indeed quite likely when you are a small cog in the wheel of a speedy rollout of a massive programme. It would be good to look at this in a positive light in view of all the bad news this virus has brought over the last year. Nick Bell, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
And on the same subject, Barbara Hall writes, Sir, my husband and I, both in our 90s, were called for our COVID jabs on Saturday at Coldon Common Community Centre. On a cold, wet morning, we were very impressed with the cheerful, thoughtful and kind efficiency of everyone, from the car park marshals to the surgery marshals to the medical staff and the doctor who made it a smooth, pleasant process. They all deserve a big thank you and much praise. Barbara Hall, Corhampton Lane, Corhampton.
And Jill Prince says that clarity is needed. Sir, it's obvious that during this current lockdown, exercise is crucial. It is good for our physical and mental well-being. Hearing birdsong and spotting snowdrops or daffodils will help us get through the next couple of months. We should try to exercise every day. The government guidelines for exercise state that you should not travel outside your local area, yet give no examples of what that actually means. We apparently are permitted to walk in parks, the countryside, and botanical gardens, but we are not given guidance on how far we should travel to reach these places. The dictionary explains that local means restricted to a particular area or neighbourhood, which is still very vague. The Prime Minister can exercise 7 miles from his home, yet it seems that people in Derbyshire cannot travel even 5 miles. Recent weather has made walks in the countryside near my home impractical. The mud is ankle deep, and there is a real risk of injury from slipping over. Walks around local roads are a nightmare with traffic racing around, breaking the speed limit and spraying rainwater to shoulder height. A quiet, safe walk on a path, which is tarmacked, would be ideal, but to find somewhere which is not busy is not easy. I could book a slot at a National Trust property, but would that be local? Would it incur a fine? Would it be better to stay indoors? This really is a muddle. Jill Prince, Linway, Kingsworthy.
And Rosemary Hillman writes, Sir, last Friday on January the 16th, We found ourselves having to call for an ambulance, as I had suddenly developed severe, inexplicable chest pain. The two-man crew daily arrived and were splendid. They did all the appropriate checks on me, but decided they should take me to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for further tests. En route, I was appalled to discover that the ambulance teams were still awaiting their COVID vaccinations. To date, they had no idea when they would get them. On my arrival at the assessment ward, very busy and under a lot of pressure, on speaking with a nursing team and a doctor, most had just had their vaccination. But one comment made was that hospital admin staff had been vaccinated ahead of the clinical staff. For the failure to protect the ambulance crews, there is no excuse. They are key workers at the very coalface. On a daily basis, they are going into homes, aside from attending the outcome of RTAs, etc., not knowing what they're going to have to deal with, protected by just a face mask and gloves. No social distancing for them. All the acute staff I came into contact with were very kind, patient and highly professional, despite the pressures. And I thank them all from the bottom of my heart. Rosemary Hillman, Downloads Way, South Wanston.
And James Anderson asks, too many people? Sir, in 1800, the population of Ireland was about 5.5 million. The country had neither coal nor iron, the engine of economic growth then. By 1845, the population had ballooned to 8.5 million, and a further 2 million had emigrated. Although potatoes were just 14% of Irish agriculture, a crop failure was the straw that broke the camel's back. The position was corrected partly by emigration and partly by a voluntary reduction in birth rate through the simple tactic of later marriage. The population fell to below the 1800 level and stayed there until 2000. Something similar is happening in Japan and South Korea, where falling birth rates are reducing the population. India's birth rate has plummeted and continues to do so. China took a drastic state action a long time ago. So I would not disagree more with we will continue to need more homes and more places to work as some sort of inevitability. Sir David Attenborough and the environmental lobby have been clear for years. Our core problem is growth in population. The UK has had its chances and blown them. Our birth rate is well below maintenance, so we have gone out deliberately to find people elsewhere. Far from suffering a consequence of evolution, we appear to be bent on defying it. That's in the Chronicle Letters in January the 14th. It's not a case of where to put more houses as to why we are doing this. James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Sir Peter Innes writes, parking racket. Sir, at the end of last year, I registered for the Ringo parking payment system as advertised in all the city car parks as a replacement for payment by card. Yesterday, I used it for the first time and was horrified to be charged £1.90 instead of £1.50 for an hour at Gladstone Street. What a racket! How can the City Council put out such a scheme? Presumably, the 40 pence extra charge is shared between the company and the council. Whatever the fact, the system must be scrapped, and in the meantime, do not use it. Sir Peter Innes, Nations Hill, Headbourne Worthy.
And Eileen Berry writes about Hyde Pavilion. Sir, I've been reading that the pavilion project in North Walls was slightly in doubt. I say slightly because this is a project that was agreed by most of the councillors to progress with. I've supported this from day one as a councillor and always as a local citizen. I think it's been a wonderful, courageous project. I was assured that it was not just for the elite, it was for the whole of the city community, obviously to be respectful of its use. There was a little anxiety that it might have been seen as just for the community of Hyde and with certain selective societies and clubs, and not for the whole of the community. But I know that this is not the case and never has been. This project should be forwarded on, pushed on as quickly as possible. The team that has been raising money for this has worked unceasingly. As the dark days that we've experienced pass, we will need this kind of facility. People will need to be out there and experiencing the outdoors, the cricket, the tennis, you name it, anything that can help outside. There will be a hunger for this kind of facility, and so it should be. You have to remember that it's also offering indoor facilities for some celebrations because it has to be viable for its upkeep. As regards to the architectural side, as long as the materials that are being used are weather-worthy and it has an appeal in its constructions, that will be a great advantage and should also be made sure of. To stop this now would be ludicrous. In fact, the council should put their heads together, whatever the political persuasions are, and get it done. We actually can't afford to keep having failures of good projects. Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
And John R. Wesley writes, Sir, I was horrified to follow a European registered heavy goods vehicle as it was required to negotiate the entry exit from Winchester direction, presumably headed southbound from Winnell on the M3 or A34, by having to transit the whole of the Alresford-Bishop Sutton bypass and back again to regain the westbound carriageway at the Alresford end. Surely this is an absolute waste of time and energy. It cannot be the turning circle at the Alresford end roundabout is too tight for articulated lorries, as the one they have to turn around at the Ropley end looks the same, if not tighter. I note with approval the comment which raises the point of the triage being opened far too early, as the predicted worst-case scenario of an avalanche of unready paperwork has not yet occurred. The alphabet spaghetti, before and after my name, indicates that I am a Europe-qualified chartered engineer. John Wesley, your Inc., BSc, CEng, MICE, MAPM, EP, FPWI, AIROR, VR.
And Maureen Gordon writes about Cowdown. Sir, I'm totally in agreement with Nick Owen about protecting the wildlife and nature of the Itchen, and I'm sure that this is the view of the majority of the villagers. However, I cannot see the objection to accessing the small area of Cowdown, which, as the name suggests, is a small watering pool for cattle. This is where for generations children have paddled, picnicked, and generally enjoyed the flora and fauna. As an Itchen Abbas resident who walks this area several times a week, I have not been witness to the bad behaviour and litter mentioned. But in an exceptional year in terms of both heat and lockdown frustrations, a few rare incidents should not be reason to alter decades of peaceful enjoyment of the site by local families. Would it not be community-spirited to reserve this small area as a recognised site for responsible use? A concession of this sort would be warmly welcomed by the villagers and go a long way into restoring good feeling. Maureen Gordon, Itchen Abbas, Winchester.
Hidden agenda at recycling centres? Asks Robin Marriage. Sir, for months I've been puzzled by Hampshire County Council's insistence on pre-booked appointments for visit to waste recycling sites. I thought it was little more than the desire for another bureaucracy, partly driven by the petty desire to ensure that Hampshire dumps are used only by Hampshire residents, or possibly as a prelude to converting the dumps from a public service into a revenue stream, as happened with street parking permits. Now I realise that cost of the new bureaucracy may well result in much lower staffing costs at the dumps, and COVID was a useful umbrella under which to introduce it. Because the booking system enables control of traffic flow at the dumps, which in turn enables such easy supervision that it can be achieved with a minimum of supervision. One person can cope all day. I suppose this means that this will be denied, but in the absence of any better explanation, I have to believe it. Robin Marriage, Kilmerston, Alresford.
And thank you to all our correspondents. And now here are two items from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. The first is a young falcon moves on. A peregrine falcon hatched on Winchester Cathedral has been spotted in Farnham. The young bird hatched in 2019 and has flown 35 miles to Surrey and taken up residence on St Andrew's Church in the town centre. Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, was delighted at the discovery. This is great news. At least half of peregrine chicks die in their first year, so it is great to see this male has got through that challenging phase and hopefully will settle and find a mate. Peregrines learn a lot from their parents, so it is no surprise that this bird has now decided to live on a church. To a peregrine, it is the nearest thing they can find to a cliff. and I'm pleased to say that the rector has agreed to a nest tray being placed in a quiet corner of the roof. It will be the same size as the tray on the cathedral, so hopefully our bird will recognise it as a good place to raise chicks. There is a single female peregrine nearby in Aldershot, so I'm hoping they will find each other soon. Mr. Betton was instrumental in getting a nest tray installed in the cathedral in 2018, following the demolition of the Falcons' previous favourite nesting site, the Hampshire Police Headquarters on Romsey Road. He knows it is a Winchester bird, as it has a leg ring, orange with code TBF, attached when he hatched nearly 2 years ago. Now, Mr. Betton is working with St. Andrews to encourage peregrines to nest. The bird suffered a serious decline because of habitat loss and farming changes until a revival this millennium. And the other item is High Street holding up well compared to other places. Winchester City Centre's footfall over the last year has been relatively high when compared to the national picture. According to Springboard, the national data portal, the city retained 21% more footfall than similar places. In December, it saw 6% more footfall than the average. Councillor Paula Ferguson believes this is because the City Council built on an already established brand. We delivered new marketing campaigns via our visitor and resident social media channels, visitwinchester.co.uk and christmasinwinchester.co.uk, to attract visitors and residents to our high streets, local shops and eateries. We also created a dedicated Rediscover Christmas in Winchester film, which captured the key highlights from across the district and focused specifically on independent businesses and local gift ideas. We promoted the Nutcracker Trail delivered by the BID, which we also digitalised to help increase uptake sustainably. During the national restrictions in November, the team launched the local shop online campaign to support non-essential retailers that were forced to close. The main campaign pages on visitwinchester.co.uk for support local shops online featured several pages for the city and each market town. We deployed a dedicated resource to proactively source and coordinate content from each market town on local shops and their offer. Part of this campaign included featuring food and beverage outlets that were offering takeaways and deliveries across the district. And Heather is going to read this week's editorial comment.
Headlined, Welcome News for Success of Campaign. It's easy to be cynical, especially in these dark days, both physical and metaphysical. The saloon bar boars of old have been replaced by the people on social media, with too much time on their hands, who say, what's the point? So we are glad to report that a campaign for a pedestrian crossing on Andover Road Week is moving towards success. It's been a cross-party effort, although not devoid of the usual political squabbling. But the initial spark came not from politicians, but local people, parents worried about safety. And it shows what can be achieved if people organise and work to a common goal. In the long term, this stretch of Andover Road will become a very long cul-de-sac, with the main road due to be diverted through the Barton Farm King's Barton Estate. The current rate of construction means that the diversion is likely to be years in the future. Obviously, the proximity of local elections in May, including the contests cancelled last year, will have focused minds at the County Council. But people have to work with that and not sink into a puddle of complacent cynicism.
And lighting up times. Today, Friday 22nd of January, the sun rose at 7:56 a.m. and will set at 4:38 p.m. On Wednesday, January 27th, the sun will rise at 7:50 a.m. and set at 4:47 p.m. Now we have items of general news, starting with Heather.
COVID-19, the latest numbers. 13 COVID-19 deaths have been reported in the Winchester district in the last week, up from 11 in the previous 7 days. The virus is retreating, but there is a lag, with a steady number of people dying. In the week to Tuesday, there were 331 cases compared to 452 in the 7 days previously. The number of deaths in the district stays at 130, or 104.1 per 100,000 people. There have been 3,954 cases since last March, or 3,166 per 100,000. Across the Hampshire County Council area, there have been 48,365, or 3,519 per 100,000. Some 1,515 people in the Hampshire County Council area have died, in Southampton 206 and Portsmouth 220. In the district, only Denmead and Southwark has an infection rate higher. In the district, only Denmead and Southwark has an infection rate higher than the UK average. The R number, the reproduction rate, has again dropped. For the South East, it is 1 to 1.2, meaning 10 people with COVID may infect between 9 and 13 people.
Fears over shortage of oxygen. Patient oxygen use at two major hospitals is getting towards its capacity, it has been revealed. Dr. Andrew Bishop, the Hampshire and Isle of Wight NHS COVID-19 Clinical Medical Acute Lead, said oxygen used at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester and the Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital is getting towards its capacity and it could become a constraint. But he also stressed that at the moment there is no alarm about the lack of oxygen at these hospitals and there are no resilient issues. It comes as the number of patients at Hampshire Hospitals, which runs the two hospitals, has increased again this week. Figures from the Trust show that there were 237 patients in its hospitals as of Monday, 82 at Winchester Hospital, 152 in Basingstoke and 3 in Andover. NHS bosses said patients who are prescribed hospital will absolutely continue to have access to it. Talking about oxygen provision at the hospitals during a Hampshire County Council meeting, Dr. Bishop said, "We have not yet arrived to a situation where that becomes an issue, which is unmanageable. But what we are aware of is that the oxygen use in those hospitals is getting towards its capacity. And therefore, in theory, it could become a constraint. There's no alarm about a lack of oxygen at these hospitals at the moment, but there's a concern about trying to expand further." Explaining the reasons behind the concerns, he added, "There are only limited things that you can do about this because there's a significant amount of infrastructure problems that you can't resolve simply by bringing in oxygen on the back of a lorry. Some of this is about the pipes and the flow rather than the actual availability of oxygen in the hospital. It is okay at moment in these hospitals, but there isn't a resilient issue as we speak. There are limited numbers of things that can be done to support that in the short term." Dr. Laura Alloway, the Trust's Chief Medical Officer, said, "Under normal circumstances, hospital oxygen supply systems have a large reserve, but COVID-19 has changed how we work, and we are seeing an increase in the use of high-flow oxygen across our hospitals, and our reserves are being accessed more regularly."
Out of the vaccine rollout. While more than 4 million have had the vaccination, there are still those who are eligible for the jab yet to be contacted. A 97-year-old from Headbourne Worthy, who is classed as extremely vulnerable to COVID because of his age, has still yet to be offered a jab. His son says that the pensioner, who does not want to be named, is concerned that he has not been given the first dose, as he has live-in care and extra daily care from outside, and this is despite him living close to the Dower House care home where residents have had their jabs some 2 weeks ago. The son says there is a wider problem as his father is housebound and has been told by his doctors that he is unlikely to have the jab for a while. He continued, "This is a very bad scenario as he, like others, has contact with people even though he is housebound and therefore has a risk of catching COVID and taking up a hospital bed. It is starting to look as if he has been forgotten or is not seen as priority. He's feeling a bit down and left out." And the son added, "Daily I hear of many friends' parents who have been done, and some twice. So I believe he has been forgotten. We are all worried that a carer could give him COVID or hospital should he need to go in for anything. Concerns have also been raised that not all paramedics have been vaccinated, despite being on the front line. Rosemary Hillman, who needed the assistance of South Central Ambulance Service, said that she thought there's no excuse for paramedics not to be given the jab. Dr. Nigel Watson, GP and vaccination lead for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, said, "We will continue to follow the Joint Committee on Vaccinations and Immunisation advice and vaccinate those most at risk first and those who work closest with them, care home residents and staff, followed by people over 80 and health and social care workers, then other people in order of age and risk." Clearly, getting our NHS colleagues protected is immensely important, both to us within the health service and the people who rely on them for care and treatment. We anticipate that all frontline colleagues will have been offered a first vaccine dose in line with the government's planned timing, and our colleagues in the ambulance survey are able to receive a vaccine from our vaccination centres. The Clinical Commissioning Group added, "The NHS has a clear vaccine delivery plan and will contact you when it's your turn to get the vaccine as quickly and easily as possible. We will make contact with everyone in the priority groups within the coming weeks."
Hospital Trust makes £1.8 million from parking. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, raised more than £1 million through charging patients and visitors to park last year, figures reveal. Data from NHS Digital shows that £1,885,301 was accrued through parking charges and penalty fines in the year to March 2020. Of that, £1,840,691 was paid by patients and visitors, and £44,610 was paid by staff, although the Hospital Trust says it does not charge staff to park. Chief Operating Officer Julie Mascarey said, "Hampshire Hospitals manages its car parks internally, and all revenues raised from the public either go towards the maintenance and security of our parking facilities or is reinvested to support patient care. Staff are not charged for parking, and charging for patients is not universal, and there are a number of exceptions. For instance, patients receiving chemotherapy or for parents staying with children who are inpatients. The full list can be found on our website. We're proud to offer free parking for our staff and to also invest in off-site provisions for staff such as park and ride in Winchester and inter-site transport." Patients' rights campaigners, the Patients Association, said, "While billing people to work at NHS car parks is a charge on people who are unwell, it provides much needed income for the trusts at a time when their finances are under pressure." Across England, NHS trusts raised £289 million from parking charges, nearly a third of which came from staff parking, generating £90 million over the year. The figures represent the gross income earned by the NHS and do not take into account its own costs for providing car parking. All Hampshire Hospital sites provide 30 minutes free parking. After that, charges range from £1.80 for an hour to £10 for 24 hours. A spokesman for the Department of Health and Social Care said, "In March, the government committed to making hospital car parking free for the NHS staff for the duration of the pandemic, and is providing additional money to NHS trusts to cover the cost of implementing this. Any surplus income generated from the hospital car parks not used to fund the provision of car parking, such as security and maintenance, must be reinvested into frontline care."
New safety technology for the county's buses. It was a stagecoach bus full of schoolchildren that smashed into a bridge near Winchester, tearing off the roof. And now the company has become the first in the United Kingdom to introduce bridge alert technology across its fleet. The £4 million project will strengthen existing measures in place to prevent such collisions. Running on a Green Hill Road system, the system will use GPS vehicle location data and mapping services to alert the driver to nearby low bridges. If it determines that the bus is heading towards a low bridge, it will sound an in-cab alert, allowing a safe exit route. Winchester's MP Steve Bryan said, "In all the gloom right now, this is a bit of welcome good news. Stagecoach still have many questions to answer following the awful events of last year in Kingsworthy, but they deserve credit for this investment. I think many parents and young people will warmly welcome it." 3 children required surgery for potentially life-threatening injuries after a stagecoach bus crashed into a bridge in Wellhouse Lane, Headbourne-Worthy, last September. Another 12 pupils, all travelling to Henry Beaufort School, suffered minor injuries when the top of the bus was ripped off. All of those injured were aged between 11 and 16. Stagecoach Chief Executive Martin Griffiths added, "Everything we do starts with safety. For our customers, our people, pedestrians and other road users, buses are already one of the safest forms of travel. But every year we invest millions of pounds in training our professional driving team and new technology to make our public transport operations even safer. Our county's infrastructure includes many railway bridges designed in an era before modern transport vehicles went on the road, creating a safety risk. And we've been working for many months with Green Road to design this important low bridge alert enhancement to their proven safety technology and are now implementing it to bolster the extensive measures we already have in place. We look forward to delivering the benefits from our investment across the country. The police are still investigating the crash."
Doing their bit in the COVID-19 fight. A life-saving initiative between 2 emergency services now begun. A group of up to 20 firefighters from across Hampshire have begun driving ambulances this week to support South Central Ambulance Service, that's SCAS, during the response to COVID-19. The agreement between Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, HFRS, and SCAS means the people of Hampshire can be kept safer and lives can be saved. Firefighters have volunteered to be redeployed to SCAS to utilise their skills for an initial period of 4 weeks to support the efforts of their health colleagues. Assistant Director of Operations, Area Manager Dan Tasker of HFRS said these volunteers are the definition of everyone playing their part in the fight of COVID. "I am so proud to see our teams playing a key role in protecting the local community." The firefighters who have volunteered to join SCAS already have extensive knowledge in delivering immediate emergency care and are upscaling their existing skills to support communities where it is needed most. Also lending a helping hand to help the NHS keep helping those in need are residents in Hursley. Most recently, 10-year-old Keane Baker, Kismet Carmana, spent a weekend baking gingerbread men, which were delivered to the ICU at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, along with other items provided by villagers. An initiative coined Feed NHS Winchester has also been set up by 2 other Hursley residents, Louise Hedges and Katie Evans, who have been raising money and have been delivering pizzas to wards in the Winchester Hospital. A member of the initiative said villagers are being very generous and wish they could do more. A recent report shows that people across the Winchester district have been restricting their movement throughout the pandemic. Statistics provided by Google have been recorded between November 29th, 2020 and December 10th, 2020. All percentages show the differences between from a baseline, which is the average movement calculated from previous years. On average, there has been 78% less travelling for retail and recreation, 29% less movement for supermarket and pharmacy trips, 23% less use of parks, 67% less use of public transport, 27% less commuting to workplaces, and 13% more travelling to residential areas. Winchester's statistics mostly fit in with the countywide picture. And there's a lovely picture of Kismet Kamana's gingerbread men. They look delicious, but they look quite startled because they are all wearing white masks and have got a heart on their breast.
Season to be giving at care home. A care home task force has begun helping community food banks in their bid to support families in need this winter. It follows the introduction of food donation boxes at Colton Care's 21 homes in Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire and West Sussex and its Ringwood head office. Staff, residents, families and other donors have dropped off hundreds of items in line with what local food banks say is most needed. Some Colton team members have helped by taking collected donations direct to their nearest food bank, seeing firsthand how food parcels are assembled, quarantined and distributed. Lorraine Bell, home manager at Colton's Lymington Dementia Care Home, Linden House, appreciated her visit to the local New Forest Basics Bank and said, "The volunteers who give their time for free are incredible. It was a privilege to see what they do. And this is humanity at its best," she said.
Cancer Day. People in Hampshire are being urged to show support on World Cancer Day for everyone affected by the disease. Cancer Research UK is calling on the public to donate or wear one of the charity's Unity bands with pride on Thursday, February the 4th. Every year, around 52,100 people are diagnosed with cancer in the South East. Wearing a Unity band is a way of showing solidarity with those affected. Available in three different colours, pink, navy and blue, it can be worn in memory of a loved one to celebrate people who've overcome cancer or in support of those going through treatment. Marked on February the 4th, World Cancer Day is an international initiative uniting people across the globe to raise awareness and take action. By making a donation or getting a Unity band via cruk.org/World Cancer Day, people in the South East can help to get life-saving research back on track following the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Cancer Research UK expects to see its fundraising income decline by £300 million over the next 3 years and needs more support to continue its mission. It's thanks to research that more people are surviving cancer than ever. Survival in the UK has doubled in the last 40 years, and the charity's work has been at the heart of that progress. But it says future breakthroughs are at risk, and so uniting to beat cancer has never been more important. Jenny Makin, Cancer Research UK regional spokesperson, said, "One in two people will get cancer in their lifetime, which is why we're absolutely determined to continue to create better cancer treatments for tomorrow." World Cancer Day is a great opportunity for people in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight to unite and show solidarity with everyone whose life has been touched by the disease. Our research has played a role in developing 8 of the world's top 10 cancer drugs, and we're working every day to find new ways to prevent, diagnose and treat the disease, but we can't do it alone. That's why we hope people across the region will donate or wear a Unity band with pride, knowing they're helping to save lives. Together, we will beat cancer. Before the pandemic, Cancer Research UK was able to spend over £30 million in the South East last year on some of UK's leading scientific and clinical research.
Light at the end of a tunnel. Care home receives first jabs. Care home residents are one step closer to hugging their families after receiving the first dose of the COVID-19 vaccination. Winchester-based charity, the Brendan Care Foundation, has announced that residents and staff at its Knightwood care home have been given their first jab. A team from St Francis Surgery in Valley Park visited the Chandler's Ford home to give some of their residents and staff the vital injection. Their second vaccination will be given in due course. General Manager Charlotte Gilbert said, "We are so grateful to the team at St Francis Surgery for coming to us to administer the vaccinations, as many of our residents wouldn't be able to visit the surgery. Our residents and their families are delighted that the first vaccinations have now been received. It gives us all hope, and we can now see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel." The National Health Service vaccinated a total of 4.06 million people between December the 8th and January the 17th, and including more than half of those aged 80 and over.
Exercising in memory of Tina. A group of more than 240 people finished 2020 with their hearts pumping whilst raising £11,000 for charity. Participants in the second annual Tinathon challenge ran, swam, cycled, worked out and power walked their way through December. They committed to exercising daily for half an hour, including Christmas Day, and paid a fine if they failed. The Tinathon was initiated in 2019 as a tribute to Tina Dury, a popular local marathon runner who died of cancer. It was organised by PR consultant Miranda Rock-Smith, who was supported by PT Heather Terry and a group of fitness coaches. Miranda said, "I'm overwhelmed by the huge success of Tinathon 2020. All of us who have participated have enjoyed the benefits, like less seasonal weight gain, less festive stress, thanks to the endorphins released through exercise. We have made some great new friends and finished a difficult year strong. And there are lots of pictures of people running, walking, riding, jumping and doing all sorts of things, all under safe circumstances."
Award for Dance Group Founder. Vicky Simmons is the co-founder of Liberate Dance. It's a Winchester's wheelchair dance group. Vicky Simmons has been recognised by One Dance UK for making a strong start in her career. Whilst running Liberate Dance, she has made a significant difference in her area of work, bringing together a strong community in the city. On being given the Rising Star Award, Vicky said, "Thank you so much for this award. It means the world to me, and I can't thank my Liberate Dance and Move Momentum family enough for surprising me with the nomination. Because of all our dancers and supporters, Liberate Dance isn't just a dream in my head, but a reality for everyone involved. So thank you for being part of this movement where we can all grow, learn and encourage each other. This award is for you all." The One Dance UK Awards are an annual celebration to acknowledge and reward the people who have made the most impact on the dance landscape. And Liberate Dance, started by Vicky and Amanda Watkinson, was inspired by Vicky's drive to use her wheelchair as a celebration of movement rather than an obstacle. Vicky said, "Liberate Dance is all about connecting a community of people and breaking down barriers and stigmas through dance." And Amanda added, "This award is so well deserved and a true testament to all the hard work Vicky has put in to make Liberate Dance a reality. She has inspired so many wheelchair users across the country and beyond and continues to do so. Here's to many more awards and a lot more dance. We're very proud of you, Vicky."
Winners of Short Play Competition Revealed. Chesil Theatre in Winchester has announced the winners of its Take 10 competition, with two Wintonians topping the rankings. Writers were invited to write a 10-minute play on the theme The Road Not Taken. An independent panel of judges from the world of professional theatre and drama then selected the winners from more than 400 entries from across the UK. The winners are A Desert Place, Rosemary Evans, London, A Grand Day Out, Ian Fraser, Winchester, All Our Lives, Christina Pye, Winchester, Along Any Minutes, William Patterson, London, Careful, Carla Patek, London, Pufferfish Over the Carpathians, Neil Walden, Gloucester, The Belgians, Ross Bateson, London, Tremble, Rob Johnston, Manchester, Tunnel, Kate Sweeney, Cardiff, Waiting for a Fare, Jean-Paul Jones, Poole. The plays cover every genre of theatre, from absurdist to tragedy, from satire to black comedy. Those 10 winning plays are now cast with 24 actors and 10 directors. Chesil Theatre chairman David Small said, "We've been delighted that Take 10 has been well received with so many participants from all across the UK. The Chesil Theatre is pleased to play its small part in giving writers the challenge of creating a unique work within a prescribed format and theme, with the opportunity to see their work premiered on stage. The ongoing pandemic means that the Chesil Theatre will need to adapt its approach to producing the festival, which will run all 10 plays. As Hampshire is currently in national lockdown, rehearsals are being held online. There is a possibility of live streaming the performances. Chesil Theatre has been running new writing festivals biannually can't pronounce that word, since 2008 and has received positive encouragement from the professional theatre, including a visit from Sir Ian McKellen, who watched the performance in 2014. Most recently, when the new Take 10 Festival was announced in May 2020, Sir Kenneth Branagh said, "Three cheers for Winchester's Chessel Theatre. At a time of challenge for all, they have bravely looked to creativity and imagination. Their new writing competition can lead the way to new ideas and new and entertaining ways to look at our changing and changed world. I hope these exciting writers will help herald the return of live amateur theatre, a vital part of Britain's creative ecosystem."
A shop opens in Twyford, in a side street front garden. It's been many decades since anyone has ventured down Twyford's Queen Street in search of a retail opportunity. That would have been back in the days of the Volunteer Inn on the corner of the Drove. But now, partly as a result of COVID, a shop has been opened, tucked away opposite the long-closed pub. It's called The Shed, and there's a picture of it. It's a large wooden cupboard with shelves and two big doors which open the full width of the cupboard. And there's a young woman putting lovely-looking home-baked foods and pot plants on the shelves. It's called The Shed, and on the day the Chronicle passed by, owner Penny Tompkins was replenishing the shelves. A 42-year-old mother of four, Penny has a strong and clear rationale for opening the shop. With lockdown in full swing, the pressure of more homeschooling and a general sense of negativity, I felt that if I could do something to lighten my own mood, as well as others, it was worth doing. Penny is a food technology technician at Thorndon School and said, "I love to bake and to make things. So I decided to do it for the village, somewhere that has a great community spirit. I wanted to create something that could be a positive focal point in the village, something to help local parents encourage their children out of the house for walks. And walkers and locals can stop off for a flapjack, a cake, a pasty or sausage roll for their lunch. It works on a cash-only honesty box system, with the money going back into creating more items and products. The Shed is registered with the City Council as a food business. Reaction to the opening has been swift and enthusiastic. Well, it's only been open a short time, but the positivity towards the things I'm making and selling has been brilliant. Is this a long-term business or more something to cheer people up during tough times? We don't know how long this lockdown will last," said Penny. "But I'm pleased that the Shed will be there for locals and those passing through while we're stuck in our houses."
New senior leaders at Cathedral look to the future. A new year at Winchester Cathedral has marked the official appointment of two new senior leaders. The church has welcomed Alison Evans as its chief operating officer and Gary Carpenter as chief finance officer. Both will be instrumental in the future growth and development of the cathedral, working with the dean and chapter to deliver strategic objectives while living the values of cathedral life. The pair will be responsible for promoting the heritage of the cathedral, implementing plans which will ensure a positive and sustainable future. With a pivotal role, Alison will oversee the care and conservation of the church and its estate, contributing to the development and implementation of strategy through participation at chapter and as part of the senior management group. She spent 13 years working for the National Trust, initially as general manager at Mottisfont near Romsey, and latterly as assistant director of operations across Hampshire, the Isle of Wight and Sussex. Alison has a specialist role in curatorship, the arts and visitor experience, with a particular interest in welcoming and engaging as many people as possible. Her earlier career was as a university lecturer and project manager in the construction and landscape sectors. Alison lives near Salisbury with her family and is a long-standing member of the cathedral congregation there. She is keen on choral music, singing in the Salisbury Festival Arts Chorus, but also enjoys gardening, photography and park run. She said, "I look forward to working collaboratively with the Dean, Chapter and staff to fulfil the Cathedral's vision to share our faith and heritage globally." Gary will develop the Cathedral's financial strategy. He brings over 30 years of experience operating at board level in commercial organisations in the manufacturing, shipping, consultancy and charity sectors.
thousands of new green bins sold. The City Council has sold 6,448 bins as part of its new garden waste service. Last summer, civic chiefs introduced the plastic bins to replace green bags, making the waste easier and safer to move. The idea was met with mixed reaction, with some residents against the idea of paying for the bins. But when given an update at the full council meeting last Wednesday, Councillor Martin Todd said he was very encouraged by the response from residents. Continuing, up to and including January the 12th, we've sold 6,448 bins. This represents about 12% of households, as some have bought more than one bin for their property. In the full week, up to and including the 12th of January, we've sold 1,040 bins, the highest level so far since mid-November, even though the scheme isn't due to start until February. It starts on February the 1st, this new scheme. And the need for the service will increase as we move out of Winchester. The rate continues to accelerate with over 200 bins sold last Monday and has consistently gone up every week since mid-November, with the exception of the Christmas week, although we even sold 8 bins on Christmas Day. Of the bins ordered, we have now delivered 4,907, up to and including January the 12th, and these bins can be used ahead of the new service starting. In a letter to the Chronicle earlier this month, Peter Rees, former City Councillor and member of Winchester constituency Labour Party, said the Council have an immense lack of hard information as to why the bins are necessary. At the meeting, Councillor Todd said that officers are working to inform residents, to ensure all residents are aware of the new arrangements for collection of garden waste in advance of the new service starting in February 2021. We are prompting this again in our next Parish Connect and on our resident email, he said.
Cathedral goes virtual. You can now enjoy Winchester Cathedral like never before. A virtual representation of the historic building has been created thanks to a novel idea by Hampshire's High Sheriff, the Reverend Sue Coleman. The High Sheriff traditionally holds a public event at the Cathedral, but due to COVID it was not able to take place. Not wanting her charities to miss out, the Reverend Coleman approached virtual reality experts ACOM to design the event in a digital format. Regional Director Andy Thomas, Head of Visualisation and VR, said, "It was a case of my team going to the cathedral and capturing a 360-degree view. It was amazing. It was such a privilege and honour to capture the cathedral when it was empty. Normally we are creating dusty town halls for local authorities." Speaking online, Andy said, "One of our biggest challenges was capturing the photography at the right time of day to get good quality light, contrast and detail within the 360-degree photograph." Now live, the virtual Winchester Cathedral showcases various local charities which are involved in early intervention work, as would normally be the case if the event had physically taken place. The Reverend Coleman said, "The remit of the High Sheriff is, in brief, to support justice. Through the creative talent which has opened up this beautiful virtual space in Winchester Cathedral, it has become possible to invite others into what I believe is at the heart of a just society, a collective passion to see each person enabled to flourish, whatever adversity they have experienced, and the will and resources to enable that to happen at the earliest possible age. Please do come and explore."
Winchester Musicals and Opera Society produces 3 new leading ladies for their 2040 show. 2020 started with a bang with a string of touring concerts titled The Sound of Musicals, which were a huge success in February, playing to large audiences in Colden Common, Westmeon and Winchester. But in March, the Society planned to start rehearsing for their next production, Pirates of Penzance, but it was clear that a summer performance would be impossible. And plans for the November production of A Chorus of Disapproval were also quashed, as it was clear the pandemic was here to stay. However, the Society did turn to online events and performances from home via Zoom. The Society and its members donated thousands of pounds towards saving Play to the Crowd and Theatre Royal Winchester, which has been the Society's home for many years, and members were delighted to hear that the theatre had managed to meet its fundraising goal in September, and that the Winchester Musical and Opera Society would be back on the stage again in 2021. However, though it may seem to have been not a very productive year for the Society, it has had its share of wonderful news, not in the least with the addition of three new members. Jill and Nova Cooper. The first arrival was in the spring, when Jill Cooper, last seen on the stage as the evil brothel madam, the spider, in the production of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, gave birth to baby Nova, who was born on May the 8th and already seems to enjoy getting into costume. Amy and South Leddy. Then in the summer, the committee member Amy Leddy gave birth to South Ashling Leddy, born on August the 11th. Amy was last seen on stage in Utopia Limited and can be found backstage as well, managing props for the Society's productions. Lucy and Matilda Francis. Finally, in September, baby Matilda was born to mum Lucy Francis. Matilda Rose was born on the September the 15th. Lucy was last seen on stage playing Lady Savage in last year's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and she played Helena in the 2016 production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. A very honourable mention must go to life member Liz Petley-Jones, who became a grandmother in October. Liz became a life member in 2019 after decades of service to the Society as a performer, director, and behind-the-scenes set designer and builder. And now the Society looks forward to hopefully replaying their 2020 production in 2021, starting with an open-air production of Pirates of Penzance in July.
Advisers' new way of working. When Prime Minister Boris Johnson said, "You must stay at home," on March the 23rd last year, people's lives changed dramatically and demand for citizen advice services surged. Citizen Advice Winchester District rose to the challenge and set about altering the way advice was delivered, from face-to-face to remote delivery within a matter of days. By the end of March, the charity had a team of 50 volunteers and 16 staff all set up to deliver phone and email advice to the local community from their homes. In the first 12 weeks of the pandemic, this remote advice team supported more than 2,000 clients, almost double the number of clients that had sought their help in the 3 months prior to the lockdown. Employment queries tripled, and advice about benefits, housing and relationships also soared. Demand for advice remained high throughout 2020, with a total of 5,700 people supported from the start of the pandemic to the new year. The subsequent lockdown now in place has prompted another peak of queries as the local community continues to face the economic and social impact of lockdown restrictions. Dr. Sue Campbell, Chief Officer at Citizen Advice Winchester District, said, "This year has been one of the most challenging people have faced for a generation. But thankfully, our service has been there to support our local community. Our team has worked incredibly hard throughout this period." And that's all we have time for this week. Please return the memory stick in the yellow wad as soon as you've finished with it. Thanks to this week's editors, Keith and Linda Vincent, and thanks to all the other volunteers who prepare and dispatch our recordings to you. And goodbye from us, Heather.
Goodbye.
And from me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. I hope you stay safe and well. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.